Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 15th of February. Very nice to have you with us on this President's Day. A lot going on, a busy weekend, obviously, and we will talk about it this morning. We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we'd love to hear from you. Again, a lot to talk about, a lot to take in, a lot to ponder. Yeah, ponder, I think is the word. Let me introduce everybody, and we'll get started. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Good morning, Joe, and good morning, rest of the panel, and thank you guys for being here on this President's Day. I know other mortal human beings don't get the day off, but we don't because it's so important that
we're not mortal.
All of you. Yeah, we're not. Though, not only that, I was watching CNN, and they were interviewing a guy who looks a lot like Mr. Potato Head. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. And I was out on...
Can you give us a name?
Jim Schultz. He's a former lawyer for Trump. But he looks a lot.
He looks like Jim Schultz. He's a former Trump White House lawyer. He sort of looks like Michael Chiklis from the Commish.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Or as Alan so plainly put it, Mr. Potato Head.
Right. Anyway, it's not a bad day out there. I did my walk early, 4:30, and I there was very little ice on the ground and the rest of it. Of course, a couple of people were speeding a little too fast, but what can I say? That's just one of the minor complaints one has in life.
All right.
Moving on.
Okay. Let me introduce the rest of the group to you. The voice you heard earlier asking the voice of reason, Libby Post, is with us, political consultant, Monday regular. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Joe. And to be called the voice of reason is so reassuring.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It is for all of us, I think. Yeah. And you're on with Mike Spain, and I'm calling you the voice of reason.
I know, because he really is.
He's everybody's favorite.
Yes.
He is. I'm so happy.
Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning. Happy President's Day.
Oh,
yeah. What do you think
now,
George Washington would be thinking right now?
Now, this is the game I want to play. So we're going to 11 o'clock this morning. So I'm keeping the last segment of the show, and I want you to think about this, panelists, all of you. And I'll introduce Rosemary in a second, but I just want everyone to think about this. I want to talk about who your favorite president is and why. All right? So think of an answer. Don't tell me now. But think of an answer between now and 10:45, and we'll talk about that then. Does that sound doable?
Sure.
Okay. Excellent. It'll be. It's a show. It's a party game. It's the roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo is with us, investigative journalist, UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning, but I am the real voice of reason. A little more less optimistic than Mike or Libby, but really.
You speak for the masses
President's
often.
Weekend, President's Weekend, I want that to be eliminated as a holiday. I don't want to celebrate presidents anymore. Trump has ruined that.
Look.
That's so reasonable.
We have to have mattress sales. What else are we going to do it? And
that's an excellent question. That is an excellent. When did mattresses get tied in with president? And I am someone who had a bad back 5 years ago. I spent like $5,000 at a sale, saying, "Oh, I got to have this." Why did I do that? It was insane.
Surely George Washington slept here, right? You know,
that's right. That's right. And it was on a dial-o-matic bed. Yeah, absolutely.
You mean George Washington? You mean George Washington slept here?
That too.
Only while in Valley Forge, and then otherwise, when he was in those beds, his wooden teeth were chattering, and it was awful.
Right.
All right. But Rosemary, again, this doesn't have to have anything to do with President's Day. We can just simply ask who your favorite president is. Surely you can come up with an answer for that.
You're the host. You can do anything. And yes, I have an answer already. So I'll wait.
All right. Thank you very much for the permission. I appreciate it. All right. Let's go to what is happening. And, of course, the big news is the acquittal of Donald Trump in his second impeachment trial, acquitted, and as the Washington Post put it, he got off on a technicality. The technicality being that even those who said that the president was largely responsible for what happened at the Capitol on January 6th, he was not. It was not a constitutional trial because it did not happen. This is what Mitch McConnell said. It did not happen. The trial did not happen when he was president. But if it would have happened, even though he kept it from happening, then he would have been. Can you figure the logic out on that one?
Yeah, the logic was survival. That's what it was.
Wow. So on Saturday, Trump was acquitted at a second impeachment trial, largely, if not completely, on a technicality, the argument that the trial itself was unconstitutional. The vote, while an acquittal, represented a historic rebuke. Seven GOP senators voted to convict. Previously, one senator from a president's party had ever voted to convict. Seven in this case. So the final vote, 57-43, that meant Trump was 10 votes from the 67 that would have resulted in his conviction. Yes, that is still a long way away, but if you look closely at what the 43 Republicans who voted to acquit said about it, it seems possible, but for the unconstitutionality claims, Trump might have come quite a bit closer, losing on the merits. At least five Republican senators suggested that Trump was indeed culpable for the Capitol riots while voting to acquit him on constitutional grounds. As I mentioned, that includes Mitch McConnell, John Thune, Senator Shelley Moore Capito, Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska, and Senator Rob Portman of Ohio. All right, Alan, let's begin with that.
It is, of course, disgusting. I mean, there were people who I know personally who, you know, really had a rough day because they really thought that the Republicans in the United States Senate, who had their hands on the Constitution and the Bible and swore their allegiance to truth and everything, would come around because they had
truth, justice, and the American way.
Yeah,
yes.
And they would come around and they would do what they had to do. Of course, I had no such expectation, knowing who and what they and their followers are like. The Republicans who switched over and who came over to the right side, they've already been censored and they're going to be censured in the future for doing what they did, which was courageous. Profiles in courage and terrific. Now Mitch McConnell has certain derision. You know, the argument here is you can do anything you want while you're president because we're going to protect you. And you can't do anything after you, president, which is going to hold you politically responsible, because you're not president anymore. It really is enough to take, you know, your breath away. It is so awful, and I can only say that for all of those people out there who won't forget this, good for you.
Rosemary Armand.
Well, I think lawyers in this country should be ashamed of their profession. Trump had the worst defense, completely talentless hack who had no case, who resorted to lies and misrepresentation, and he still won. That there's something wrong. And I think that we are in a huge muddle for reasons that Alan began to get into, the seven who voted the way that case should have been decided, are being punished, censored. And Burr, who I don't know how courageous it was, he's not running again. He didn't have to answer to anybody. But his seat now, one of the contenders is Laura Trump, Donald's daughter-in-law, who's a little one of his minions. And his people will be out in force to protect her. We're far from over the trouble that Donald Trump has caused. Now, on the other hand, is what do Democrats do from here? And I take back everything I've ever said about Biden living up to unity and bipartisanship. It's clear that he needs to pass voting rights immediately so that when we do come to a contest between Democrats and Republicans, Democrats have an easier hand. He needs to start working on gerrymandering for the same reason. He needs to get through COVID aid. and forget trying to get them to sign on. I'm done with it. I think that the Mitch McConnell speech, which was a speech for conviction coming after he acquitted him, was, I mean, we've remarked before about his hypocrisy, but nothing ever will beat that. And we just take it? No, no. It's time to now take off the gloves and start playing with them. And one last thought. I've been watching the trouble that Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, is in trouble here. He has made a mistake. And have Democrats pulled away from criticizing him, from calling him out? No. The Democrats hold their own people to a higher standard, and the Republicans don't. And that is a problem. And we have to do something about it as Democrats. That's it.
Libby Post.
Well, I, you know, there's not a lot more to say. I mean, Mitch McConnell, I was screaming at the television. You know, Mitch McConnell's speech afterwards was a profile in cowardice, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, he laid out all the reasons to convict, and yet they hang up on a technicality, which the most conservative of legal scholars say was not a technicality.
Well, a technicality also that they themselves created, the technicality,
right,
saying
right.
that, you know, he could have, that could have happened while he was in office.
That's
but
right.
They wouldn't allow it. So
right for him to say, oh, we should have, this could have happened if he was still president. But yet McConnell was very clear he wasn't going to let it happen. It's just, you know, so duplicitous. The problem is what we need really now is to clone Stacey Abrams and to have her and her forces go into some of these states where there are minority majority in terms of population and get folks registered and get them empowered and get them to vote some of these people out. I mean, you know, we all thought Amy McGrath had a shot at beating McConnell, and she didn't. You know, we saw time and time again. And so we just need to be strategic. And what this does, though, is free up the White House, free up the Biden administration. We're now past this, and he can get down to business, and the Congress can get that down to business of passing what needs to be passed, but also approving an attorney general, getting the rest of the cabinet filled, and just moving forward. And it was interesting because McConnell said this is a case for the Department of Justice, which means, I mean, in my book, which makes a signal, sends a signal that they're going to approve Merrick Garland. And because this is going to be an opportunity for McConnell to raise money. All that speech was a fundraising speech to the big pocketed donors who couldn't stand Trump, but still like the Republicans, still like McConnell's politics. And just to let them all know he's still in charge in a way, and that, you know, I think they think they're going to saddle the Democrats and the Department of Justice with this, and that it'll be an overall negative for the administration.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I think that the battle is underway for control of the Republican Party. You have the Washington Republicans like McConnell. And you have, you know, the insurgents, you know, like Ted Cruz or Josh Hawley or even, you know, Lindsey Graham, who's all over the place, but currently he's with Trump again. And you have McConnell and kind of the establishment Republicans. And they're worried, of course, that the base is going to, you know, back Trump. But it's good for the Democrats if they want to get their programs through. I think they can. They have the votes to do it themselves, and they're probably just going to go ahead and do it while the Republicans kind of battle for control and soul of the party. And, you know, this stuff all plays out pretty quickly, and it's going to heat up if Trump does start doing interviews and starts showing up at rallies and doing, you know, speaking tours across the country. And we'll know pretty soon how effective he's going to be if Laura Trump decides to run in her home state of North Carolina. North Carolina, you know, it's like Georgia. It goes even more than Georgia. It goes both ways. You know, it's a purple state, and it could backfire or it could catch fire. But in the meantime, the Democrats, have that one dilemma that I think McConnell is an astute politician. Handing it to the Democratic Justice Department, you know, under a Democratic president, and saying it's up to them to go after Trump, it can pull them in to the briar patch. You know what I mean? It can pull them into it and bog down the Biden administration with, you know, holding Trump accountable. And I suppose we'll talk about it. I think the answer is to sort of get an independent commission, bipartisan commission, to take a deep breath, step back, and look at everything that led up to January 6th and all before it, and recommend ways to go forward.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that, Joe, as well. Alan?
Joe, if I may, I wanted to react to something that the wonderful Rosemary said. She talked about voting rights. She's certainly right about that. This is a great time. All three institutions, Democratic, pass it now. And there's no way out of that. But she also said the gerrymander. Well, Felix Frankfurter started it all in the Supreme Court, and they're still talking about it, which is we don't get involved in the political thicket. So in that one, you'd have to get through the Supreme Court also. But boy, the gerrymander is responsible for all kinds of chaos in this country.
We are going to take
latest,
a break. Go ahead, Rosemary. Okay. We just have about a half a minute.
I was going to say, in the latest gerrymandering case to go to the Supreme Court knocked it back to the states. So there's no question Democrats have to do a lot more organizing and politicking on the state level. Republicans are way ahead on that.
We'll continue our conversation on this, and we'll bring in listener letters. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We welcome you to do that. We just ask you to keep them short and to the point, and to the point is a big thing. Yeah, have a point. That helps. And pre-read them, because sometimes you either use abbreviations and I don't know what you mean, or you leave out words. And I'm not grading you. I'm just saying that if you want them read on the air, we have to be able to understand them. That's all. You do that. We'll do this. We'll be right back. Listening to the great Chick Corea this morning, the legendary jazz keyboardist who died over the weekend late last week, died at the age of 79, and playing the music of Chick Corea in his memory. Today on the Roundtable, we have a playlist posted online, WAMC.org/roundtable, WAMC.org/roundtable. Okay. Let's go to, did anybody want to say anything else on what we were just talking about? I know. Okay.
Well, I do think, Joe, that McConnell deserves special scorn this morning. I mean, at what point do we come in America to a place where we can stand up and say, I did the wrong thing. I should have voted the other way. I did it. You know, it is so interesting to me that he felt the need to stand up and say that. In other words, to sort of protect himself somehow, except that most people will see him as a hypocrite. Certainly, Donald J. Trump will see him as a terrible enemy because he said that stuff. So if he was going to take that scorn anyway, why not do the right thing and vote the right way? Because, oh boy, he may have lost his leadership post. Yeah. That's the last thing he wanted to do.
It was weird because, I mean, it's not like it's a solid argument that lasts for more than a nanosecond. when you're listening to it, you just start, as you indicated, Libby, you just start like screaming right back.
Right.
You were the one who did it. Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
It's hard to figure out. Okay, I have some letters. Let's go to those. We go to this one who says, I think it's time to focus on the many issues that face the country and world, and time to stop talking about Trump. DJT is reveling in all of the attention that he continues to attract. It's tempting to review, analyze the past 5 years, but I'm sick and tired of him. He deserves to be ignored. Okay, fair, except that there was an impeachment trial, the second of this president. I think that bears reporting.
Yes.
And I don't want to be defensive here, but, you know, the German people, something I remind people of every once in a while on the show, got very angry and after post-Hitler and did what they had to do. They turned around and they took a serious look at it. Look, I think this country came very close to re-electing a totalitarian fascist president. And it may well have been that there was a warning signal. We have to examine what happened here. So I really do disagree with the letter writer.
But, you know, it does raise a discussion. If Trump does begin to do interviews and start to go around and you know, do a tour, whatever, how much, 2 years before the midterm elections, how much attention should the former president get? And isn't the most important thing right now beating the COVID pandemic and bringing the economy back and trying to go forward? And if he's out there, giving him any kind of, you know, above the fold, top of the newscast play, other than, you know, just keeping an eye on him in case he makes news. But if he's just out there saying the same old, same old, same old, I'm not sure that merits a lot of news coverage. What do you think?
It may not merit it, but it's going to get it. Look, this guy, you know, let's face it. We know Mussolini, how he ended up, you know, upside down, hung upside down. This guy had the same properties as Mussolini. I'm not calling for his death, believe me, because I don't believe in that in this case. But I do believe we have to take stock of what almost happened in this country. So important. He was so awful.
Rosemary, anything on the news coverage angle?
Well, I don't think it's up to us in the media to decide what's the main priority. I think it's up to Biden, and he's been rather strict that he wants full attention on COVID. I think he's gotten a lot of it, but Trump is news. He is a major force. Look at what he did this past the past couple of weeks the past 4 years, if you want to go that way. But since January 6th, he continues to be a major player, with only perhaps Biden being more of a player. How do you ignore that? It would be very nice, and Democrats want that, but that's not the function of news. So, no, I would not be ignoring him at all.
Ignore is not what I said. I said is top play. I mean, it seems to be that Trump, you know, if Trump continues to get equal play to what's going on with COVID and what's going on with the stimulus and what's going on with the new administration, if he gets equal play to all that, currently he's coming off an impeachment. But if he continues to get equal play, I think that's disproportionate.
On the other hand, Mike, think about it this way. Think about it this way. What if we're discussing COVID? This man has cost, what, 500,000 deaths, something like that, close to it?
Almost.
In this country. That has to be said, and it has to be pointed out.
It is. It's been said, and it's part of it, but it isn't. He's not
enough.
The lead. He's not the lead anymore, okay?
No. Okay, fair enough.
I would dispute that, which is the problem. News is not set out by dictum, and everybody covers it the same way. I think he's plainly the lead. He's the cause of the predicament now, why COVID has to be number one. He continues to disrupt our politics. He continues to get away with murder in a country that says all people are equal. Those all make him a top news story.
And how are you going to explain, which we are doing now, how much better the United States is doing? There are a lot of people who have, you know, things. There's no Super Bowl. There's no this. But I think part of it has to go to Joe Biden. Joe Biden wears a mask. Joe Biden is a guy who has said every American ought to be doing this and protecting themselves. And I think, frankly, he should be getting a lot of credit for what's happening here.
I think that the fact that Trump no longer has Twitter has really cut down his exposure. I mean, you know, there were so many media stories that were generated because of his Twitter feed. And so
every day, every minute,
you know, that has stopped. And he's not going to be part of the President's Club. You know, Obama and Bush Jr. and Jimmy Carter, they're not going to welcome him with open arms, that's for sure. So he won't be part of that whole milieu. And I think he'll lash out like he did. Okay, so he got his story about the witch hunt and all that sort of stuff and blah, blah, blah. His base will continue to listen to him. I don't think he's going to be the top story above the fold anymore, because I do think the media recognizes that there are much more important issues to deal with in the immediacy. There's COVID, there's the economy. Those are two things. And that has, and then that pivots to Joe Biden, where you have a president and a first lady, for the lack of a better term, who are showing affection to one another, who are showing what normal relationships look like, who are doing the country's work, who are compassionate and empathetic and understand how much everyone's hurting. So I think that Biden, he's the president, and he will get the majority of the coverage, as he should. And Trump will continue to flail, but he doesn't have that ability to reach millions anymore. And the only way he can do that is through the media. And if the media is smart, they won't give him the platform.
The media is smart, but it also is unbiased. And Trump is the first ex-president who has ever challenged a current president, who ever tried to stop an election, who is continuing to actively undo elections in this country. I'm sorry, that deserves top coverage. I would be right out there covering.
Bravo. Bravo.
All that is appropriate. All of that is appropriate. But the election is over. His impeachment is now over. And it's not going to go away, and it's going to be part of the news. And right. The contrast of his response to the COVID crisis versus the current response is notable. All of that is notable. But you know, let's look at everything. And when you look at everything, it's only a smaller part and a diminishing part, unless he does, you know. I mean, you know, things can change. If news happens and it gets covered. But it goes back to 5 years ago when CNN discovered that if they ran all of Trump's just racist and terrible speeches and vicious speeches, they'd get high ratings. And we gotta get off of that. We gotta go back and look at things objectively. Objectively, Rosemary, doesn't mean equal time for the jerk in the room.
That's for sure.
Couple of letters, and then we'll take a break here. Rick writes to us and says, this is the perfect description, a quote from E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post about McConnell. Rarely has a politician been more blatant in attempting the impossible feat of running with the foxes and hunting with the hounds. We go to Jeremy, who says Trump's complicit co-conspirators in the Senate are, of course, reprehensible, but they're just political actors responding rationally to will of their constituents. That's why I reserve a healthy share of my enmity for Trump voters and supporters. They create the demand in this perverse political market for weasels like Cruz, Hawley, and Mike Lee. These voters are the core enemies of American democracy.
Yeah, but if you use the word rational, or rationally in this case, as in the letter, it indicates that they are doing what's good for them up front. And you have six Republicans who came over to the other side, and who will be, I guarantee you, recorded in history as the heroes in all of this. The idea that these... I don't want to say a word that is not permitted on
miscreants
on radio. That's one of my favorites, miscreants. Who did what was, quote, rational for their short-term gain and ignored the Constitution and ignored decency, scorn. That's all I got to say.
All right, one more letter, and then we will go to a break. Aline says, of the seven who voted guilty, I believe that only one is up for re-election, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. So
gotta give her a lot for that, I'll tell you right now. Now, Alaska's a little different. They treasure independence, and you know, she'll win, in my opinion. But yes, that's a big issue.
And finally, David says, give Trump airtime. He will root out the idiots. Hit him in his nearly empty wallet. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more letters. We'll go over those. We'll continue to talk about the acquittal of the second acquittal of Donald J. Trump. And we'll move on to other issues as well on this President's Day edition of the Roundtable. By the way, people are writing and asking if they can also, because I mentioned I was going to ask the panel later on about their favorite president. And we have listeners who are writing and asking if they can share their favorite presidents, which I think it's cute that you asked. That's very nice. But of course, yes, if you wish to write us that, that is fine. We would love to hear from you.
Panel, you can put them in a pile. That's put them in a pile and read them at the same time that we do our thing.
Yeah, we got our thing. I got it's called collating. It's all fine. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back after this short break. I'll admit it. Sometimes I just like to read letters because I know it's going to tick off the panel, and I find that to be fun. So I'll read this one. Why does the panel continue to look at Trump as the problem instead of a symptom? How about an in-depth discussion on the political and social factors that created an environment that made Trump possible and not the intellectually lazy racism, xenophobia, and misogyny go-tos?
Well, Alan. I think it's fair to say we have, and we have many, many times. Yeah. I have, for example, pointed out what's going on in this country, that we have, you know, a majority, a former majority, now apparently a minority, who have said again and again that our white privilege and our racism is justified. That's what they are saying. And so that's what's causing the whole thing. But it isn't as if I got born yesterday or if I just started saying that now. I've said it again and again.
Rosemary? Uh-oh. Sounds like we lost Rosemary.
Uh-oh. Right.
We'll get her again. Mike?
Yeah, I think that's the person who wrote the letter is correct. Trump was the result of some very dark sides of our society and our political culture, and he rose to fame. But part of it is that he harnessed that feeling, and he harnessed the fear that people had about losing their power and what they perceived as their place in society, and their future was in danger. That's what they believed,
exactly.
And he was able to just seize on that and rise up. So, I mean, he was certainly the result, but he also propelled it forward and became its biggest champion.
Rosemary, are you back?
Put it another way, Mike. How did Hitler get his start?
Remember, he was regarded as a buffoon by many people and not taken seriously, and then, you know, what happened?
To that point, Ed writes, kudos to Alan for continuing to put the Trump phenomenon in historical context as he has done for years. We would all love to just forget about Trump, but we can. We have to continue to talk about and understand why Trump was elected in the first place and why he continues to hold on to such power in this country. The suggestion that Trump continues to have this power simply because he is being discussed in the media is just wrong and kind of silly.
Rosemary is back. Can I endorse that last letter writer? I think
absolutely.
That's exactly right. I think that Libby and Alan especially have gone on and on about the racism and misogyny and white privilege. So I don't think it's true that we haven't covered it. But on the other hand, there's a lot of issues that do play into this now. We're beginning to see them. One is the manipulation of our political system. The Republicans are masters at this. They have figured out how to rule in the minority as if almost they were the majority. And so the debate about the filibuster, the debate about whether to really go after Biden's unity program, that's all part of that discussion. Really, really important. And Trump has played into this. Trump used the powers of the presidency in a way we never saw before to bring power to his party. So I do think that we're talking about other things. But again, I put Trump at the centerpiece of all of this. So that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Well, you know, yes, it's all about race. I've been saying this for a very, very long time. And he and Trump was able to capitalize on the fears of white America, that they're no longer going to be in the majority, and that people of color and communities of color, some of whom are advancing and doing better than white men who are never went to college, let alone graduate high school. And it scares the living daylights out of them. But what was really interesting about the mob is that it also had middle class people in it, you know. And so I think Trump has been able to ignite the horrid racist underbelly of this country that goes beyond one particular class. I think it's across racism, sexism, homophobia, anti-Semitism. It goes beyond class distinctions. You'll find it everywhere. And, you know, this man has done a good job of fomenting all of that. Now, whether or not in his position now, he'll be able to keep it going. I mean, I read something that this morning that QAnon thinks he's going to be taking back the presidency on March 5th.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, that's
March
the other
5th
part
used to be Inauguration Day. That's apparently why they picked that date. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the other part of this, is that these are people, some of whom actually have a college degree, who have bought into this QAnon fallacy and all the conspiracy theories. And it's going to take a long time for us to get through that and make sure that we can be on the other side of it.
Libs, I know you agree with me that just because you have a college degree doesn't mean you're not stupid.
Oh, absolutely. My father didn't even graduate high school, and he read the New York Times any day, and he was one of the smartest guys that
mine
I've ever known. Yeah. But, yeah. But, you know, but the problem is that my father, born in 1917, didn't graduate high school, went to the war, blah, 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 blah. He valued education. He wanted my brother and I to go to college, as did my mother. Some of these folks do not value education at all. They thumb their nose at the Eastern elites and people who are college educated. And critical thinking has gone down the drain. And that's part of the issue here.
I have a couple of letters before the top of the hour break. We go to this one from MK, who says, McConnell planned it. Make sure the Senate didn't get held responsible for conviction, then lambaste Trump so that the state DAs would take charge for all of the crimes committed. Then he threw some gasoline on the fire and walked away. Supreme strategist and a real ..
I think if McConnell could have organized, I think he really hates this president. And I think that if he had been able to organize his Republican followers in the Senate, those all who voted for acquittal, he would have done it. I believe that. And I believe that you know, his pathetic utterances afterwards are a lot of people are ascribing that to a great and a grand strategy. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think he really was very upset that he had, in order to preserve his leadership, he had to go along with this. Yeah.
Steven says, will Trump's influence... Go ahead, Rosemary, I'm sorry.
I was going to just say, I think he read the tea leaves, and he knew that if he swung to conviction, he might have brought enough votes that they would have actually impeached him, which he did not want. He had set it up with that holding off the trial so that they have this constitutional out, weak as it is. It proved to be exactly the escape hatch they were looking for, and that he had that speech planned, and he planned the acquittal with the speech directly. And his goal then, ever, and for always is to retain power for Republicans. He knows there's a fight with the Washington branch and the Trump branch, and he's playing right in the middle. He has to keep a very divided caucus together. And again, watch this man. I hate him personally and for his beliefs, but he is a master manipulator of our political system.
couple more letters and then we'll go to a break. Jay writes and says, criminal trials will accomplish same end as conviction while possibly preventing further violence. Think of this as a chess game. Senate acquittal and McConnell's speech were all strategic move. Trump will be checkmated. What do you guys think?
Nobody would have predicted any of what's happened in the last few years. So I suppose anything can happen, sadly. But if Trump is convicted in a criminal court, either in Georgia for manipulating the election, in New York for filing false information about, when he was seeking loans from banks, or any other crimes, he could be charged in Washington, D.C. for violating the terms of the permit for the rally on January 6th, which was supposed to stay right there, and he told them all to go to the Capitol, which violated that. So he could be charged with a lot of things. The fear is that when he is, he'll be martyred. And, I don't think that's a reason not to do it. I'm saying I don't know how it'll turn out. I don't know how the public will react. I think that this... The Democrats' presentation during the impeachment process was excellent. I think they knew that they read the tea leaves, too. They knew it wasn't going to result in a conviction. But what they did know is that it was going to turn into sound bites on TV and on websites and all over. And it was really an appeal to the general public. And I think that is going to have... And it is. It's having a detrimental impact on the image of Trump. I think he looks bad and he's going down in the polls. But we've all been wrong about things like that.
Right. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more letters and we also will move on to other topics. A reminder, in a little bit, in about 40 minutes or so, we're going to turn the conversation and ask about your favorite president on this President's Day. I'll be asking the panelists and also welcome your letters. We're getting many, so I'm putting them in a special place on my desktop. So please feel free to write to us and let us know. I think it'll be fascinating to see what you all think this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Libby Post join us on this President's Day Roundtable Edition. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, and we'll continue after news with Jim Lavoulis. 7 minutes past 10 o'clock on this 15th day of February. It is President's Day. We have a special panel this morning going to 11 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters. And let me get to some here and we'll continue and then we'll move on to other subjects, I promise. Let's see. We go to John, who said, I was unable to listen to some of the panel discussion this morning. I do not know whether there was reference to the fact that Fox News did not carry the impeachment coverage when the Democratic team presented. This means a sizable portion of the country does not know the real story of the attack on Congress. While true, and we did discuss it, not this morning, but we have discussed it. We discussed it last week as it was happening. I don't know. Is that preaching to the choir? Does that make a difference? I don't know. Mike? Alan?
Well, I didn't know about this, to tell you the truth. So I'm left adrift. So what the letter writer is saying is that Fox cut
they
out
did not the run, Demo- They did not run the Democratic prosecution. They did run the defense, but they did not run the prosecution. The question being, does this... the fact that those people did not hear the truth of what happened, and my question is that, preaching to the choir? I don't agree with the news decision, but I wonder how much impact it would have had.
Not really. Because, Joe, as you well know, there will be some fair-minded people who think that they're fair-minded who are watching this and who would be convinced by the Democratic arguments or by the manager's arguments. I'm not saying it will be everybody, but it certainly would be some, and it's disgraceful. I just didn't know about this, that's what Fox had done.
Libby?
Well, I'm not surprised that that's what Fox did. There are times when I joke around about wanting to take away somebody's gay card because, like Richard Grenell or some other people that we know. you know, it would be really great if we could take Fox's media card away and just tag them for what they are, which is a propaganda machine for the far right, and stop the facade or the charade that they're media, because they're not. You know, the fact that they didn't show the Democrats, the impeachment team's arguments, where is fair and balanced in that? It's not.
On the other hand, there are some people like, you know, Wallace and others who are there who do, you know, a moderately credible job. It's not as if it's all bad. This is, of course, a disgusting story, you know, that they are censoring the news. They have their moments.
Few and far between.
Are we sure it's
and
true?
I can't believe that.
It's not completely true.
Fox did show.
What did you say, Mike? Fox showed some of it. Mike, did you say that it's not completely true?
No. I mean, what they did was they broke into it during some key times, and the commentators who were on were refuting it and saying, you know, disagreeing with it and saying this doesn't add up, you know, and stuff like that. But it wasn't, from what I read, and I wasn't watching Fox, but from what I read, you know, and then at night when people were, you know, the commentators are on, the Hannitys and et cetera, Laura Ingraham, right. They were, you know, they were refuting what was on and they were putting it down. So, I mean, it was typical Fox at night. But during the day, they did run a lot of it. It's just that they didn't run it all from gavel to gavel, so to speak. But it is a problem. I mean, you know, if Fox is the only place that you get your news, you're going to get a skewed news. And if NBC or MSNBC is the only place you get your news, or CNN or whatever, the New York Times, I think it behooves people to go to a couple of news sources and kind of understand before, you know, and get a couple of points of view of how it's being presented before they just take it as gospel.
I think there is something to the idea of fighting Fox, because, as Libby says, it's propaganda, it's not news. And there is a movement afoot, which I love, to call up your cable provider and say you no longer want to subsidize Fox in the form of having it included in your basic pay, your basic cable package. So, in other words, even though you're not watching it, you're still helping to support it. And yeah, I'm watching that. I hope that has some support and some effect.
It has two. It costs $2 out of your monthly cable bill, they estimate, because they have Fox gets most of its money from a lot of its money from that. Even if the advertisers cut back on Fox, they're still going to make a ton of money on the cable franchises, and they get paid a whole lot more than MSNBC and CNN and the others. So that it's a big source of revenue. So if people can say, well, I don't want to be paying in my cable bill for Fox News, I don't like it, and that movement picks up, I think you're right. I think that's going to get real traction.
Didn't we fight about this? I'm getting a little off topic here, but there was an FCC rule that would have put up, this was had nothing to do with Fox. It had to do with bringing down the cost of cable for people, but the idea was to do it a la carte, so you would only pay for what you wanted, which was voted down by the Republicans, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, I mean, the cable companies don't want that either. I mean, it was lobbying in general. I don't know that it specifically had to do with Fox News. The cable companies want to charge you for the smorgasbord and the level that you have. The interesting thing is I have Verizon Fios as my TV provider, and the I have a fairly low-end cable package, and it has Fox, but it doesn't have MSNBC. So I can watch it online, but it's interesting that they don't regard that. You know, it's not equal representation, so to speak. So I think that if petitioners, if cable, you know, subscribers complain to their cable company that they don't want to be paying for Fox and they want it off, that, you know, it's going to pick up something.
So apparently this story came out of the Fox story. I'm looking at this Snopes looked into this. There was an Associated Press article that was written on the 12th, and they looked into it, and they said Fox News Channel cut off an impeachment manager in mid-sentence Wednesday as he was presenting dramatic video footage of the mob attacking the U.S. Capitol last month and government leaders running for safety. The political math doesn't add up, said Jesse Walters of Fox News. Democrats don't have the votes, and they're still pressing ahead. The incident was a dramatic illustration of the tightrope walked by programmers at television networks that appeal to fans of former President Donald Trump during his second impeachment trial. Fox, along with ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and MSNBC, had been covering House managers outlining their case against Trump for nearly 5 hours Wednesday. While sometimes dry and methodical, the presentation reached an emotional climax when Eric Stalwell showed graphic video, much of it not seen before. That's when Fox cut things off shortly after 5 p.m. when the network started the commentary show The Five. So that is where that is coming from. So it explains it a little bit, I think. Okay.
Would it resolve anything to have the fairness rule or a new version of the fairness rule put back into effect?
It would be helpful.
I'm not so sure.
I don't think it ever affected news. You're allowed to cover
impeachment.
Say that again, Rosemary, so I can understand it.
The fairness rule applied to statements and speeches, but not to news. And so under the guise of news, you could cover as much about Republicans or about Democrats as you want.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't apply, for example, to an impeachment hearing.
Well, would it apply to Rosemary giving an opinion on WAMC and somebody saying, I want the fairness doctrine invoked on her? And putting
basically, it had to do with actual, unless I were running for Congress, I don't think it would apply now.
Oh, no, I think it might have been thorny. Because when they ended the fairness rule, that's when AM hate radio just took off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Rush Limbaugh type stuff. Yeah. I mean, it radio stations could get somebody like you on, but they'd also have to get somebody who represents a different point of view on, give you equal time. That was the whole notion of equal time. And that made it very difficult for, you know, stations that wanted to have commentators. So at night, Fox would have to have somebody counter. Remember they used to have Combs, Hannity and
that's
Combs?
A good point.
And,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes, you're right.
I missed that show.
It was to cover their butts. And then, you know, pretty much as that rule was, it was unworkable. Frankly, it was unworkable. But what I wonder is if there is a the public owns the airwaves. We have a First Amendment. You know, there is a business enterprise of Fox. I don't know. Maybe it needs to be labeled. You know, this is not news or something.
Or it's hazardous to your health.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Let's go to what time? Okay, we have we're about 17 minutes past the hour, so let us go to the other story today, and I want to talk about this idea of the Capitol attack probe with impeachment over 9/11 probe leaders lend weight to calls for an independent commission to investigate the Capitol attack. Saturday's 57-43 vote brought an end to Congress's formal effort to hold former President Donald Trump accountable for the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. But that traumatic moment for the country will not quickly fade, nor should it, not after an attack on the symbol of democracy and democracy itself. The Senate vote left multiple questions still to be answered, including some that the president's legal team deflected during the trial, chief among them exactly what did Trump know as the attacks were unfolding and why he didn't do anything to protect Vice President Mike Pence or order immediate reinforcements to the beleaguered law enforcement officers at the Capitol. Trump could yet face judgment in court, whether criminal or civil, but the full story of what happened and how it happened remains untold. One vehicle for the fact-finding could lead to protecting the Capitol. Those who work there and the democratic institutions they are sworn to defend is the kind of commission that Tom Keene, the former Republican governor of New Jersey, and Lee Hamilton, the former Democratic House member from Indiana, headed after 9/11, and now are advocating to investigate the January 6th events. Alan, what do you make of that idea?
Great idea. Needs to be done. I don't see any downside to it at all. You know, let the facts fall where they may. And I think it's a wonderful idea, and I look forward to seeing it happen. There's no good reason that it shouldn't. You got enough votes to make it happen. Obviously, with the Republicans who voted for the conviction, plus the Democrats and the Democratic president of the United States, it needs to be done. Great idea.
Mike?
Would it have subpoena power? Would it be able to compel people in the White House who witnessed Trump allegedly ranting in joy when the attack was underway and speak to the, you know, get cell phone records so they could see when it was that he called and juxtaposition that with what was going on? And, you know, things like that. I mean, if it had that kind of prosecutorial teeth, if it had those teeth, I'd be in favor of it. Otherwise, I think the Democrats pulled it all together very well, but it had already been in the media. Basically, it was a campaign of months that the election was going to be stolen. And then the Trump people all arranged, got the permit, paid for everything. And, I mean, you know, we might learn new details about how, you know, a lot of people who flew in from all over the country had no money, but they somehow got there, that the GOP or Trump's campaign was paying for them to get there, some crazy thing like that. But I mean, what will it tell us? Unless it has teeth and can, you know, subpoena Trump, it's just going to be more of the same, I think.
Well, I don't agree with you. I think anything that we have that reminds people of what actually happens, Mike, would be a good thing. I completely agree with you. Poof, if I'm dictator, poof, you have subpoena power. But you may not have subpoena power. But, you know, the fact that we had this trial, which we pretty well knew what the ending was going to be, a so-called trial, which in the Senate, brought a lot of Americans into the fold. They saw what was going on. The more of it, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Would I love to see what you've recommended? Yes. But do I think it's worth having anyway? Yes.
Rosemary?
What I said at the beginning of the show was that Democrats have to start acting like Republicans. And this is another feint. It would take a year and a half before we would hear anything from this commission. They would skirt the same sort of congressional investigation that Trump has throughout his reign. You'd come up with a report important for history, and so I can't be opposed to it. But it is no substitute for Merrick Garland getting in there and bringing actual charges, or the D.C. prosecutor, attorney general, rather, to go in and absolutely bring charges against it. That's what I want. That's what I think would make a difference. And this nice long study is, we all know this. You're a political scientist.
No, we don't all know it.
When you want to shut people up, when you want to shut people up and say, okay, we're doing something about it, but you're really not, you appoint a committee. And I think that's what this would be.
You know, one of the reasons, Rosemary, I think that witnesses were opposed. I know why witnesses were opposed by both the Democrats and the Republicans. The Democrats were worried that if there were witnesses, the Biden program wouldn't get through. It would be a morass. It wouldn't happen. And the Republicans knew that every day we were finding out new stuff about what these folks were doing and what this president was doing. And the last thing, and I'm sure there were calls from the White House on this, the last thing that they wanted to see was the opportunity for stuff that we don't know yet to come out. And I think that's exactly what a commission would do.
Well, I think you left out one thing, and that is that the Democratic managers knew that even more information would not make any difference. If they haven't made the case already, then it's even McCarthy getting up, which would never have happened, and saying, yeah, he really was a jerk when he called me in the middle of the riot. And that would not have made a difference. To Lindsey Graham, look at the guy. Do you remember that just a few weeks ago he was saying, oh, yeah, the president did a bad thing, and I'm his friend, and I'm even saying it. And then he got harassed in the airport, and now he's back with his lips on Trump's butt again. So nothing would have happened. And I think the Democrats were right to say, okay, let's forget this. And maybe that's why a commission is required, because it's not going to keep the news from coming. It's going to dribble out from reporters. Do you think that any of those trials of all these people who have now been charged will not be covered assiduously by journalists? Oh, no, they will be. So it is going to still continue to drip out. So that's fine. I'm all for knowledge gathering, but it is not a substitute for it is not a way to hold anybody accountable. That's the part of the narrative. Oh, well, here they'll get their due. They're not going to get their due. They got away with it.
Who said it had to be one or the other? It doesn't. You're absolutely right. We've got to bring the miscreants to trial. But on the other hand, it's a good idea, and it will be supplemental to history and everything else, which we are so important in this country, so that we don't face a fascist dictatorship again. No, I think we can have both.
Mike?
Well, just on that point about preventing it from happening in the future, yeah, it's more academic, though. This kind of commission is more academic, and it might lay out the framework of how it happened and what has to happen for it not to happen again. And you're right, Alan, we came very close to a coup in our country. And
it was a coup, right? That was a coup.
It met the technical legal requirements of a coup, according to coup experts. And the coup experts, political scientists. It met the definition of a coup. I don't know where it would have gone. I don't believe the military would have come in, and it just would have been more chaos. But it was scary, and it was dangerously close. But a commission, a 9/11 type commission, will put out a report that will become it'll put its mark on history. And the other interesting thing, Rosemary, you said it would take about a year and a half. That's what they estimate. A year and a half is 6 months before not even that. It's like three right. months before the midterm elections.
Oh yay.
But the flip of this, I mean, I would love to see this happen. We just need to make sure it doesn't become a political cudgel for the Republicans, because, you know, this is supposed to be nonpartisan. And given the milieu we're in right now, how much can we guarantee that that will happen? I mean, if the president gets to appoint everybody and it's, you know, and he appoints people from both sides of the aisle, people who actually think and, you know, don't have knee-jerk reactions and aren't just Trump. You know, it's one thing, but if the Congress has any say and the Republicans have any say in who's going to be on it, you know, I question whether it can be really bipartisan and neutral like the 9/11 commission. So I think it would be great, but we just have to be careful.
Well, we have to be careful, but, you know, this business of that the Republicans shouldn't have anything to say about who is going to be representing Republicans. Imagine, Libby, if the shoe were on the other foot.
It was a
Republican president, you know.
I know.
You know, remember when I say that thing about how we love your letters? You know, mostly that's true.
Mostly, except for the three letters that said, somebody's sniffling on there, and just stop it right now.
Well, sorry, folks.
No, I know. It's cold and flu season.
Just stop it right now.
Goodness sakes.
Sweet, sweet people.
I just heard I was trying to figure out, I got like an emergency voicemail, and I finally got it to play, and it said, yeah, about the nose, and I was like, all right.
Are you kidding me?
We're good. Oh, no.
Why would I kid you?
Yeah, why would we kid you about that?
Okay, so
but
folks,
go ahead.
What people need to understand is they were complaining that my other headset was garbled. So now I'm on a headset that's really
picks it all up. Yeah.
Right. Everything. So it's one or the other.
Hey, listen, Libby, you're allowed to sniffle.
Thank you, darling. And for all you folks who
you know, the couple of people who write to us whenever they can about anything they can, the sniffling thing, considering what's going on this program, really doesn't make the cut.
I was proud because I wrote one listener a letter. They said, Joe, you are sniffling on the air and you have to stop breathing on the microphone. And I said, well, I know it's not me. It is someone else. We will address it. But I know it's not me because I stopped breathing on January 6th. So
nice.
we only have about a minute to go here. And what started all this, when I was saying we love your letters, we got this letter from Kevin, who said, I am stunned, absolutely stunned. I can't believe you are not discussing the Cuomo scandal. I think I could guess why. Well, we covered the Cuomo scandal three times last week.
We did.
There is nothing new to that other than, well, there's nothing new to that other than just time and more reporting on it. I think it went from being a state story to a national story over the weekend. So that has happened. Alan, you talked about it at your 7:45 commentary this morning. There is that, but we can discuss it when we come back. There are a couple of letters on that as well.
I know the reason why.
Okay. Yes.
Maybe you don't.
That's right. It could be as simple as it's cold and flu season and we just all have the sniffles. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this President's Day. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Libby Post. We have a half hour left together before we go to a special coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, which is called Resident Presidents. And they've taken comedians and actors and presidents themselves and put together a very funny hour of things that have happened and various sketches that have been done about the presidents over the years. So that's special coming up at 11 o'clock this morning. So until from now till then, we will go to another topic. We will also in just 10 minutes or so, we'll start talking about best president and favorite president. Not even best president, but your favorite president. Who's your favorite president? We got a lot of letters on that, so we'll go to that in a few minutes. And Alan, would you like to address the Cuomo thing again, and we'll go around the group here, and then we'll move on. Is Alan there? Mike, are you there?
Yeah, no.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, okay, there you go, Alan. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Don't ask me what happened. I don't know. I did my best. I've said it before. I'll say it again. This was a bad mistake on Cuomo's part. They shouldn't have done it. You should never lie or even obfuscate. You just shouldn't do that. It's a basic rule because sooner or later you're going to get caught. So don't do it. But in any case, it's not going to kill him. He's got a 54, or the last time I looked, he had a 55% approval rating. The Republicans are riding this as if they were riding a bucking bronco. They think this is really going to make tremendous sense for them. They're going to say, okay, let's impeach him. Don't be ridiculous. Listen, this is a guy who busted up with Kerry Kennedy, as I have said so many times. You don't remember the double trucks in the New York Post. Remember those, Mike, about how he was through in politics because he had offended the Kennedy clan. And then the two assistants he had who really were, they were robbing. And they were robbing and they were doing that. And a lot of people said, oh, this is going to kill him too. And it didn't. This isn't going to kill him either. He made a mistake, and they should be much more forthcoming about having made the mistake, but it certainly isn't going to kill him. That's for sure.
Mike, your thoughts. How damaging is this to Governor Cuomo?
Well, I agree, Alan. He's a formidable politician in a very heavily Democratic state, and it would be very difficult for him to be knocked out of office by this. But a lot of people didn't think that the state senator from Peekskill could ever beat Mario Cuomo. And along came George Pataki. And, it's just anything can happen. And four terms, if he runs for a fourth term, people do get tired of politicians when they've been around too long. So, and today's Times Union has a suggestion that Lee Stefanik is gaming to challenge Cuomo. If that happens, I think he's all set. He'll get back
I
in.
I can't wait.
And me neither.
I just can't wait. That would be,
it would be so much fun.
Yeah, that would be terrific. I don't know. She doesn't know where to go at this stage. I have a place she might consider.
All right, Alan.
What did I say? No.
No, I just, yeah.
Did I say something incorrect? No. So anyway, look, this was a blemish on his record. Mike is absolutely right. Fourth terms are very difficult. I noticed that George Pataki couldn't help himself. He's been invisible, but all of a sudden he's saying, yes, bad Cuomo. So there is that. Now, George Pataki was, when he challenged Mario, a who-he. Remember that? Who
right.
He?
Who's that guy?
Who is that guy? That's a joke. But it turned out to be a big Republican year. And I can only say that was the end of Mario. He didn't understand it. It was a tough time for him. And I'm sure that Andrew, who watches and reveres his father, is aware of the difficulties of a fourth term.
And when he ran for president, he became a who-he again, which was, you know, back to his roots.
George Pataki, yes.
Yes.
Well, I'm listening to this conversation and thinking, you know, shame on us, because Cuomo really does deserve to lose his position, because what he did, it's not some small thing. It is small only in comparison to what Trump has done. And it's one more piece of his legacy that we're so inured to bad behavior from our politicians that we will accept this. He deliberately lied. His actions. It's the lying. I was going to say it resulted in death, but it didn't really. I mean, he did the best he could at the time, but didn't have the nerve to tell us that. And it's not the first time that Cuomo has kept records secret that ought to be and by law should be in the public. He has associations with close friends who are completely corrupt, and he's escaped it. And that's giving me pause. I'm a Cuomo voter, but if someone good came up against him, I would surely vote against him.
Got anybody in mind?
Be Elise Stefanik, I can tell you.
You got anybody?
No, Alan, that is a strength that Cuomo has. It's one of the reasons he is willing to be unaccountable in these ways, because Cynthia Nixon and Elise Stefanik are not going to beat him in New York, and he knows that.
You know what? There was one newspaper, and I forget whether it was a TU, it may have been, Mike, who tested the theory. What they did is they put a whole bunch of people up against him, or it was a polling organization, against him. And nobody could come close to him. All of the major players. And yet, when the people were asked, and this comes back to Pataki, when the people were asked, should there be somebody new, the answer was overwhelmingly yes. So how do you do that? In other words, yes, there should be, but put them up against Elise Stefanik or anybody else, and it won't work.
Why is a fourth term so elusive? I mean, it is a long time, but it does. There also seems to be the unwritten rule of like, okay, that's enough.
I'm governor for life kind of thing, and that's a scary notion. And, you know, with George Pataki back in 94 with Mario Cuomo, people didn't know much about him, and that was actually to his advantage. He didn't have any negatives. And because he didn't have any high negatives, Mario always had high negatives because he was pushing for things that was going against the grain in many cases. And Andrew
the
certainly
death penalty, like the death penalty, right? Yeah, I mean that
really right. I mean he offended a lot of people. He was forceful and he was good at being condescending and pointing out hypocrisies, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, so they really, you know, he offended some people, and I think Andrew Cuomo is vulnerable in that category too. And I agree with you, Rosemary. I mean, what he did was a forgivable mistake aimed at trying to save lives. Why did he cover up? Why didn't he just acknowledge it? We did some things wrong until we learned how to manage this thing.
What he should have done. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it's easy to say now.
No, that's
does
what
anyone?
Yeah.
Go no, ahead. Go ahead. Libby, I'll go with you, but I'm interested in Alan. We talked about this with Alan on Friday, but with Melissa De La Rosa of coming out and saying what she said, and then the clarification, I mean, that all seemed to be very awkward. I don't know. I mean, they had time to plan that and still seemed like a mistake.
This was a Zoom call, and everyone and their brother is recording these things, and in New York, you can record without letting the other people know.
If you say it into a phone or a mic, assume somebody's going to have it, though.
Right. Come on. Right. Yeah. Just assume somebody's going to be, you know. And the thing is this, is that, yes, he'll get reelected because the Republicans are in disarray, let's be real, and don't have anybody strong enough. But that doesn't mean that the Democrats are going to stand idly by. I mean, we are having the new Senate Dems, Michelle Hinchey, John Manion, a number of other folks are standing up saying we need an investigation. So they're feeling their oats with this whole thing and feeling that they can stand up and challenge the governor on this, which is interesting. You know, from a political perspective within New York State, that you have all of these Dems saying enough already. So we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I don't expect there to be a strong primary challenge either. And nor do I expect him to go down because of this. I think there will be some heads that roll, but I think they'll be in an agency or two.
All right. Anybody else on this topic? All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We are going to talk about favorite presidents. We have a lot of letters. We'll have thoughts from our panelists. We'll wrap up. Last call for this President's Day show on this Monday morning, the 15th of February. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our last call on this Monday morning, the 15th of February. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Libby Post make up the group. So at the start of the show, I asked our panelists to think of who their favorite president is and why. We asked listeners to join in as well. We got a ton of letters from them. But let's go to the group first and go around, and then I'll read some of the letters, which are, I will say, both interesting and creative. Alan.
Well, I'm never going to deviate from my Lincoln love. I think the guy was great. He was imperfect. We all know he was imperfect. But that's what made him so great. He led this country through the greatest thing other than what we're going through now, the Civil War. He spoke well, and his words have been immortalized, and I love the guy. Then, of course, George Washington ranks very high with me. Maybe tied, maybe number two, because Washington really set the standard. And unlike the jerk who was just left the White House, he was a man of great integrity. He did not want another term. He was not after personal adulation. I think he was a terrific president, and he was pretty good. I like Harry Truman. I like Eisenhower, believe it or not. I do. I think Eisenhower made some mistakes, but he was basically a man of integrity. Anybody's guess. A lot of people love Harry Truman, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I think he's, top of my list, too. Harry Truman is amazing. Mike Spain.
Yeah, the two guys being honored today kind of lead the pack way out in front of everybody else. A few are close, I suppose, like FDR. But the, Washington came, made decisions and had a vision that got us through the tumultuous time of the post-Revolutionary War and the establishment of the Constitution, and he got it. He understood how to lead. And then Lincoln, he just took us through the most awful time, and he kept the country together when it was being ripped apart by horrible things. So if I had a bet, I guess the test would be Lincoln, and he gets it by a hair or a beard.
Yes, by a hair on the beard. Libby, go ahead.
Well, I think Lincoln, not to be redundant, but it was one of the best books I ever read was Team of Rivals, and it really showed what a master politician he was. FDR and Obama.
Yeah. Agreed. Rosemary.
My pick is Dwight Eisenhower. I have admired him for a long time. For me, he's an unusual pick because he's a Democrat and a military man. Those are not values that I would ever espouse. But I think that he was an absolutely brilliant man. He was a Renaissance man, and that he excelled in very different lines of work that he pursued during his long career. He was a visionary. The national system of Rhodes is from Eisenhower. He is the one who gave one of the most important speeches in American history, his farewell address, which I listened to and make classes listen to, in which he warned of the sort of power that we're seeing being wielded right now and ruining our society. I have never understood why Reagan became the saint of the Republican Party and not Eisenhower. Genius.
We have a lot of letters, and as I said, some of them are very good, and a lot of them are very creative. So we'll just jump in here and go in the few minutes that we have left. Ken says that George Washington, although extremely flawed, being a slave owner, he had the opportunity to be king, but stepped down at the height of power, creating the United States of America. We got this one from a person whose name I can't make out. But anyway, he did many things of note, Teddy Roosevelt, throughout his many different offices he held. But it was his zest for life, his efforts of overcoming asthma, his progress politics, and I assume that means progressive, but maybe just progress politics, and especially his conservation work that matters, Teddy Roosevelt, our favorite president. Barbara says Millard Fillmore, and mostly just because it's fun to say the name. We got this from Anthony, who says, I recently read the Harry Truman biography by David McCullough, one of the best. An excellent writer and a very eye-opening biography. I never understood why a college history professor ranked Truman as one of his top three presidents. Now I do. It is a life and presidency worth studying and learning from. Let's see. Jimmy Carter is my real hero, says Andrea. Real-time, compassionate leader. I remember the days. I think Joe Biden is much like him, and that is thankfully so. FDR, says Pamela, because Eleanor, Lend-Lease, WPA, his personal crusade to beat polio, which shows the mettle of the man. I always thought Lincoln was our greatest president, said Jim. But my academic friends tell me that American historians regard Washington as the greatest president. Certainly, the greatest president is one of these two. I think it is vital for all our schools to teach presidents with the honor they deserve. I wish the holiday were named Washington and Lincoln Day instead. Favorite president, says Irene, JFK. He allowed himself to confront his own conservative philosophy and become a transformation into an awakened individual by securing a peaceful solution to the Bay of Pigs and committing to withdrawing American support in Vietnam. He was a profile in courage. LBJ says, Roseanne, I think Lyndon Johnson was a great president. He started the war on poverty, which expanded civil rights and started Medicare and Medicaid. He's not mentioned much, but should be.
All because of Vietnam. That's what killed him.
Catherine says, I've seen several and have two that I'm going to say as favorite presidents. President Obama, because he is so ahead of his time and the American voters recognized him. And Jimmy Carter, in retrospect, because of his humanity. Humanity that I, for one, did not appreciate during his presidency, but have come to realize human beings need a lot to help display humanity. Both Carter and Obama bring great humanity to the world and lead by example.
Carter would get elected as the... No, well, you have others. You certainly have Obama, but Carter certainly would be in the running for best ex-president or best defeated president.
Oh, DR. Best president who actually did something. I mean, not that the others didn't, but he really has made a mark.
And integrity.
After his presidency.
Yep.
DR writes, the past is gone, exists only in memory. The future is no less real, existing in imagination rather than memory. So my current fave is President Harris.
That's interesting.
My favorite president was the 13th president, Millard Fillmore, also a great gem of a state park in Moravia. So two votes for Millard Fillmore. Jimmy, go ahead. Anybody else?
Didn't somebody write and say?
I thought Mike was going to say.
Say Millard Fillmore four times?
Three times really fast, yeah. Yep. And I can never do that game. Jimmy Carter says Eric, and because he was and is a kind, intelligent, compassionate, and decent human being, the most moral president since John Adams, who is another favorite of mine. Joe Biden says Dean of Red Hook. He ended the reign of Donald Trump, and he chose Kamala Harris as his VP. Let's see. We go to...
There is a difference between the best president, in your opinion, and your favorite president.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that you'll get different answers. But Jimmy Carter ranks up there, man. I mean, he is a lot of people's favorite, even if he wasn't maybe the best because he couldn't do it all in 4 years.
We got this from Karen, who said, has a list, actually. John F. Kennedy for his inspiration for the younger generation. Abraham Lincoln for his unification of the United States of America. Franklin Delano Roosevelt for his Depression-era policies that helped the country cope with the Great Depression. And Harry Truman for being his own man and, quite frankly, making the bow tie work. We go to Mary, who says Edith Wilson, who ran the executive branch after her husband Woodrow Wilson had a severe stroke. Let us not forget.
She would come out of the room and she would say, "This is what the president told me to tell you." But he wasn't talking. It was her.
This is one of my favorite letters, I will admit. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I do think it's hilarious. David writes, "My favorite president was Gerry Ford because he was there for such a short time and he wasn't able to do anything really bad."
Pardon Richard Nixon.
That's right, which was really bad. I have to mention two presidents, says Jan. As a young Boston Irish Catholic, President Kennedy, and of course, Barack Obama. Janice says, "I retain faith in America because of President Obama." We got this letter from Eric. "I would not contend that Carter was one of our greatest presidents, but I wish to enter a word of appreciation for his decency and statesmanship in restoring normalcy after Nixon and Ford had fortified much of his claim to honor by pardoning Tricky Dick. And there's a parallel to Mike Pence's obsequious loyalty to Trump, which contrasts with but does not completely negate his integrity in counting the electoral vote. But Carter, a Navy submarine officer who respected science and prized statesmanship, was mocked by Republicans for a perceived lack of masculinity and served only a single term. Let us remember this episode as we reflect on the rise and hopefully the fall of Trump and how the GOP treats Biden." I think we have time for two or three more. And in the 2 minutes that we have left, Ed writes, "Truman, underappreciated, but great." And we go to Khan, who says, "Apologies." I don't know what he's apologizing for. But anyway, "A choice is FDR, but he was the first president for whom I pulled the lever. It was November 1944. I was 18 months old, and my father held me up to cast his vote." Yeah GOP Democrats voter fraud goes way back. Oh, and there are a couple of other reasons. "Saving the world with the help of my dad and uncles from Nazism and saving the economy with the New Deal. Let's hope that defeat of Nazism was not temporary." So, a lot of people checking in. I think we have time for one more. Martin Van Buren. "He's local. He's ours. He came. He saw. He left." That from John. Okay. We thank
he's
you very much.
Up the street.
That's right. We got a couple of people who are saying for the golfing category, Ford should get a mention. And let us not forget Grant. And we also have a Lyndon Johnson because of his great sense of humor. So a lot of cool letters. Thank you very much for playing along this morning. And thank you, panel. Alan, thank you very much.
Great job,
Be well
Joe.
Today. Enjoy.
Well done.
We'll be back tomorrow for another edition.
My thanks to Rosemary, Mike, and Libby for giving up a holiday and coming in today and being with us for 2 hours. You are always the best. It's the dream panel, and I am thrilled you were all here. Thank you very much.